Session number 6232, compilation of interviews, women.
What was childhood like? Well, it was something so different to what we have today that it's almost, well, it's another world, of course. We were brought up by our nannies and then governesses and then sent away to school. And our parents had the least possible to do with us, as long as we were shut up in the schoolroom and kept. And of course, we spoke when we were spoken to. It was better to be seen and not heard. And it was a restricted childhood in that. Certainly, it was very, very different. We were under very strict discipline too, very strict discipline. And we grew up as probably giving more affection and devotion to our nannies and our governesses than to our parents, who we didn't see that much of course.
And what was really expected of little girls? What was a nice little girl?
Oh, a nice little girl was a very feminine little girl who gave all the attributes of femininity. You see, it was a man's world. Totally and completely. Women were not supposed to have much in their brains. They were supposed to be fascinating, interesting to the other sex, anything but a blue stocking. And of course, we were not brought up to careers at all. That simply wasn't thought of. The one and only career was a good marriage.
Can I move right on now to the point where Mrs. Knocker has written to you to say that there is work to be done for the girls who can drive motorbikes, and you must go to London and you must join the suffragettes. Now, you come home and you tell your parents. Now, can you tell me what happened when you broke this news?
When I broke the news to my parents that Mrs. Knocker had, first of all, immediately I was to show the letter, and so my mother said, of course, quite out of the question, she's not going. That's absolutely flat. And my father said, well, although she's only 18, she has got her head screwed on all right, and it's very natural for her to want to do something for her country in these circumstances. So my mother said, yes, she can do something here, but she is not going off on her own to London. And so I could see, because my mother also could argue back, you know, and I could see this was going on for a very long time. And then I heard my mother say, well, anyway, I will not give her a box or anything to put any clothes in, you see. So I thought to myself, I got my £10 dress allowance yesterday. I've got £10 in my pocket to go to London with. And I went straight up to my bedroom and I got a large bandana handkerchief out and I packed up a spare underclothes and a spare change and everything, tied it all up in this handkerchief and went out surreptitiously and quietly to the stables, got out my motorbike and rode to Fordingbridge. And the next day up to London. And I went to the little theatre where they suffragettes were running, had opened up with the Women's Emergency Corps, which, as you know, the suffragettes called off everything as soon as the war broke out, gave their full and loyal services to the government. And I carried dispatches for them.
Can I ask you, what you volunteered, you simply said because you felt you must do something.
Yeah.
What, in fact, were there other thoughts in your volunteering? Was this another way of escaping from the closeness of a girl's life?
No, I had nothing in my mind except that I got the chance to go to London and I had the chance to do a worthwhile job, I think. It was the lure of adventure, of course, you see. Already the motorbike had started adventure in me. And I think it was just, here's an opportunity.
When you got to London, you became a dispatch rider for a while, and then something really rather momentous happened. Now, can you tell me about that?
Tell you about what momentous happened while I was working for the suffragette. Well, one day, and I happened to be in, the Honourable Mrs. Heverfield was running the little theatre for the suffragettes. And she sent for me and she said, there's a Dr. Hecht Monroe who's come who wishes to see you. And I want you to come here. So I went into her office and here was Hecht Monroe. And he had seen me riding this stripped motorbike, dodging through the traffic in London. And he was a great feminist. He believed enormously in votes for women and all that. And he had seen me flying a little flag with WEC on it, Women's Emergency Corps, so that's how he knew to find me. And he'd conceived this extraordinary idea. Let me tell you, Hector was something quite apart. He was wonderful. He had conceived the idea of forming a flying ambulance column to go to the rescue of Belgium. And he had also decided, I am going to take four women with me, and I am going to prove to the world that four women can go onto battlefields, go under fire, and not break down. She was dealing with a totally untrained person in myself. Therefore, she was going to allocate me jobs that I could do quite nicely. I mean, I was quite able to do all the smaller wounds and all that kind of thing. But she thought, well, I might as well take on things that she felt that she wasn't going to waste her time on. So these wretched men in the trenches had these, some of the most ghastly boils. Really, they were terrible. And how they managed to stay in the trenches, because they were mostly between the buttocks, and how they managed to march or stand up in the trenches. I mean, you know the size a boil can go to. It's absolutely immense. And the route, you see, will be that big right in. And so they were given a chit and allowed to come to our dugout to have these boils treated while they were in the trenches. And they changed every anywhere from 2 to 4 days, depending on what was happening. So that I became a complete boil expert. And I was always looking behind the sides of these poor fellows, so trying to get these awful roots out. And of course, you see, today you treat boils quite differently to what we treated them. One must have caused them a great deal of pain trying to get this thing out. You had to ferment it and ferment it and ferment. Well, of course, they had to go back to the trenches. It couldn't be properly done because the bread poultices and things got cold, you see. And they came in all the time, you see, they were given chits because appeared that I was getting these valley things moved. And so that was one of my chief things, and VD was another. And Mrs. Knock always said, well, I don't want to touch VD, you keep these special rubber gloves and you deal with the whole of that. Well, the men were in a desperate plight over this, and there was absolutely no provision for these men. A lot of them should have been withdrawn from the trenches and treated. We only had mercury, and they used to come to me at times and say, Mademoiselle, I am going on leave. Is there anything you can give me to protect me? You know, things like that. So human, so absolutely straightforward. But Mrs. Knocker, of course, was a formidable personality. She could carry anything through, and the Belgians had the deepest respect for her, because if there was anything that went wrong anywhere, she was straight at them in headquarters. So she went down to headquarters and she said, this is absolutely wrong. You've got to have some hospital somewhere where these men with VD can be evacuated to. And she had that put through. Women are not equal to men. But we were pioneers. Yes, we were pioneers. Certainly. And I think it was very important that should have been a demonstration. And I think what should be remembered is that Dr. Monroe had great vision. He had great vision. He was trying this thing out. And I think to all women at home who had been working so hard to get emancipation for women, to get a better position in the world, I think that we had our part to play, and that is entirely apart from the fact of the work itself. And nobody could take from the Baroness the fact that she had been the means of saving many lives. And perhaps in my own small way, yanking people in time to get them dealt with. No, I think we had a great part to play, and I think that's why possibly that voluntary system happened at that period in history, that it was time that women demonstrated perhaps that they could. But although they had done through the ages, you know, there's no doubt about it, had been done through the ages, but this was a critical age because of the suffragettes, because of the fact that most people in Parliament were dead against the women getting a vote. And it really was a very tough thing getting it. Of course, it was given to them after the war, and that was partly because all of us had done things, and they always said it was because we'd collectively done a very big job, that the vote was put in.
And in those years, it was absolutely wonderful life. All parties, all fun, all dances. And for 2 years, nearly, we really led a gay life. Everybody did. And then there was a sort of an idea of war. And people began thinking, should they do something? And we used to have tennis parties and discuss what we could do if we had to do anything. And I had an idea that I would do nothing except nurse. Other people would do nothing except land work. I mean, none of us did anything at all because there was no necessity to. There was no need to. And then as time went on, I realized that there would be a war. And so I went to various lectures and took the first aid course and the home nursing course. And my mother was very much against me nursing and said, now, whatever you do, you're not going to nurse. I'm not going to have you nursing. You can go as a pantry maid, yes, but not as a nurse.
Why do you think she had that attitude?
Goodness knows. She just, her daughter was not going to nurse people who are, quite frankly, the lower classes, Tommies. There's a sort of class warfare, I suppose. And she thought that way round. Anyhow, about 6 months or 8 months afterwards, I decided that I was jolly, got my nursing exams behind me, and I would go in for nursing. And I started at 8 o'clock, no, 7:45 in the morning, and didn't get back till about 5 o'clock in the evening. And Mother said to me, how is it that you go so early and come back so late? And I said, well, actually, Mother, I'm nursing now. She said, what, nursing? Where are you nursing? And I said, well, I'm nursing in the South African hospital in Walton-on-Thames. You are not nursing those blacks? Can you imagine it? Blacks.
Would you say that it's true that all the VAD nurses really came from the same background in the same class?
I'm almost certain to say that that is so. The ones that were not quite of the same class, I never met them, but they were generally VADs as cooks or undercooks and that sort of thing. Quite frankly, they were people who could afford to be voluntary aid people. Other people went into the land army. Well, then they had to be paid. But they were slightly different class. I think really, seriously, they were of the more middle class, upper middle class people who did that. Because they could stand the racket of no pay, really.
Were the cooks paid?
The cooks were all paid. And the sisters were all paid. Of course, they had been trained.
Yes.
The sisters, matron, and the secretary was paid. Otherwise, there was nothing went out. From the VAD's point of view.
Were any of these girls, people who hadn't really realized what nursing and hospitals would like, and they thought it would be perhaps...
They thought it was going to be fun. They thought it was fun. They soon found... That was a thing which the sisters soon found out and gave them hell in consequence. Some of them thought they were in just for the uniform. And I had one girl in particular who's a very wealthy girl, and she thought she was in for the fun and for the uniform. And she got a very sticky time. Rightly so, because she just wasn't helping. Not at all.
And then from Boots, I went into the army. I had volunteered for everything, VAD, all sorts of things, but always we had to be 21. Being women, you mustn't be free, you mustn't go about, you mustn't leave home, as it were, until you were 21 in those days. And when the WACs came along, I was 21. So I just volunteered. Boots didn't want to release me, but eventually they did. And that was that. We were medically examined and pronounced fit. And Kitchener, of course, wouldn't allow them to use the WACs. And not until Kitchener died were they called up. So although they had enrolled, Mrs. Pankhurst formed the Women's Voluntary Reserve. I was a suffragette, so naturally, as she had formed them, I wanted to join them. And we had 2 weeks training.
What made you join the women's services?
Well, because I was a patriot. Britain, before the First World War, was so marvelous. Just to be British, it didn't matter how poor you were, unimportant in your own country, you were important in the world, you were a Briton. And only the people who lived in those days have any idea what it was like. It's quite fantastic. You can't imagine how we feel about the change that's come about. And today, I mean, people aren't even proud of being British, never mind about have the right to be. We had the right to be, or at least we believed we had. And at school, on Empire Day, we had most gorgeous affairs, and everything was so, so different. That when the war came, of course, we were fantastically patriotic. It was all patriotism. Not emotional in any other sense, except for the sake of the country, must be saved at all costs. What we stood for, everything we believed in, was threatened.
What were your reactions in August 1914 when you first heard about the war?
Excitement, I think, more than anything. We were young and... You see, life was so normal and ran on an even keel, and this was something that threw everybody out of gear. And our friends, boyfriends, were rushing to join up and all this sort of thing. It was changing our lives completely. We all saw ourselves as Florence Nightingales and so forth. We had a sense of humour about it. We were funny. We had lots of laughs over it because we didn't think it was serious, really. We didn't think that Britain couldn't walk in and wipe them up, you know, and that was that. We were soon disillusioned. And the German prisoners prepared the hut floor for us and did a marvellous job. Some of them were awfully nice fellows, these German prisoners. We weren't allowed to fraternise with them. If we'd seen speaking to them, we'd helped to lose the war. But they were nice and they were victims of the situation the same as we were. And they did all sorts of things for us. I mean, if the people in camp had known, they'd been horrified. All the things they would do for us, cut up wood, etc., to enable us to have illegal fires and and such. And they knew, you see, that we weren't allowed to have them. They deposited them in caches we knew about, and they were good.
When your hair and your skin turned yellow, could you wash it off?
Oh, no.
How long did it take before you got...
Well, it just wore off, you know. Oh, I don't know. I don't remember that, love. Oh, I was going to tell you about these old... So, of course, these old conductors used to say in the tram, you'll die in 2 years, cock. You know, they used to say, don't they? So, well, we don't mind dying for our country, you know. As I say, we were so young, we didn't realise. But they used to call us canaries. Yeah, we're bright yellow, and all this front hair light was all ginger, you see.
Where were you when the war was declared?
Oh, at home, like in my own. No, I wasn't work. I don't know. I think I was. I must have been working at that shimmies and knicker place. Yes, because I must have been. Yes.
And did you go to the shell filling factory because you wanted to do something for the...
Oh,
war,
yes,
or
yes.
Were you asked to go there?
No. I was very patriotic in the first one. Not in the second one, darling. I run away with the kids when the bombs come. I don't mind tipping you because, well, it was the kids, really. But, oh, no, I was very patriotic in the first war. Well, everybody was. I mean, if you saw a chap out in the street, you know, you'd say, well, aren't you in the army? You know, I mean, well, we thought it was marvellous to join, you know, to go to war. So we were always up in the office with complaints. So when we used to go up there, there'd be about six men sitting, because we was all numbered, you know, like a soldier. Then they used to ask us, and they'd get the book, you know, 2 9 7 7, and we had numbers straight away. Anyway, our money come right down to nothing almost, about a pound, I think, as far as I can remember. It was very, very low, I know.
Your wages?
Yes, very low. And, of course, we all started kicking up a shindy, you see, so... The men, because they were already in the union, see, us women wasn't in the union. So I know they stopped all the machinery, and one bloke stood up on a wooden box, and he said, look, girls, he said, until you get into a union, you'll never get your wages right. So, of course, we all joined the workers' union, see. And our money went up from, I should think, well, as far as I can remember, it went up quite a bit. I think it went up about another 30 shillings. I think it was about £2.10, which was a lot of money then, you know. Though, as I tell you, we'd wait to work 12 hours a day. Well, of course, a lot of the girls wanted to put me and this young kid, like, as shop stewards, because we were the two that used to fight for them all. But, of course, some of the older ones, they said, they ain't been here 5 minutes, see, so we refused to go out and fight any battles for them, aren't they? I said, well, if, you know, if you want to do the work, you do it. Because we didn't mind at all, you know. As I say, she had her army pay, and I had a good deputy army that we didn't mind. Well, in any case, they wouldn't have sacked us because they could... Well, I don't say they couldn't get them, but they was out for everybody that they could... see what I mean, love? And one night there, well, we always used to like the warnings to go off before 10 o'clock because Bedford Square used to be full of soldiers, you know. We used to have a good old... Nothing wrong, no. Well, in those times, they didn't do nothing wrong like they do now, do they? But, of course, if we used to run down... We used to work at Plumstead Bridge, you see. But if we used to run down to Bedford Square, of course, it used to be alive with soldiers. And, of course, us in our khaki, oh, we was the centre of attraction, you can bet your life. They'd say, come here, kids, you know, let's have a look at your new trousers, you know. And, oh, we used to toss our old head up and, you know, think we were the cat's whiskers, you know. Because we used to come home at here, we used to come from Dartford through to London Bridge. Well, one day one girl came in down at, was that at Woolwich House? No, I think it was. Anyhow, this girl came in, so she said, here, there's a lot of German prisoners down at near Kidbrook, you know. And so, of course, we all went the other way around home to see these German prisoners. They were only young boys, you know, and they all had like little round hats on, you know what I mean? Well, when they saw all us girls looking out the carriage window, no, it must have been Slade's Green, that's right, because I was still yellow. And when they saw all us girls looking out the window, they all pulled their, you know, poor little devils, all putting their hats off, like, you know, must say hello, you know. Oh, and I thought, good God, Germans, like, talking to us, you know. So I said, we'll go around that way the next night. So we went around the next night, and as we come near them, like, you know, I don't know if it was running into Kidbrook Station or just running out, but I know the train was going a bit on the slow side. And I'm saying, shh, 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 shh. Must I say, you can laugh afterwards, can't you? I mean, poor little devils. I mean, they had to go the same as our men, didn't they?
But they look so bewildered, and I say, whatever she's trying to do now, I'm saying, look, shh,
What did you think of Germans then?
Well, of course, we hated them more or less, didn't we? I mean, you couldn't do anything else because, I mean, but since then, I mean, one chap I knew, he married a German girl. Oh, she was lovely, you know. She used to say to me, look, Queen, your men had to fight, now men had to fight. She said, well, they had to go. Well, of course they had to go. But what's, don't you think it's stupid war, don't you think so? Where are we now? There's all those lovely boys being killed, aren't they? And we're worse off than we've ever been, haven't we? Can't get a room, can't get nothing. So, what's the good of war, love?